Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
We all have in us what is a natural need to gaze upon, to look at things that are greater than ourselves. It's built right into the structure of our very soul. It's why men and women who come to beautiful places, or who as they drive down the road see that particular sunset or that cloud shape or that mountain in the distance. It's what draws us to these things that wants us to give our attention to this, whatever it may be, that as we look at it, we can feel that there is something larger than our little life. And our lives are little right now. And the occasion where we see that mountain, or we look off in the distance and see the vista, or whatever it may be that we stand in front of, and for that moment know ourselves slightly different in that same moment, and because of it, there is a longing in us to belong to something greater. Every human being, unless they're just damaged beyond repair, longs to know themselves through something greater than themselves. It's inherent in us. It's what moves us in the early stages of our lives as we're maturing. It's what drives us to relationships. I know the sex thing is big and wanting to fulfill the conditioned life that says picket fence and all that business. I know all that's in it. But what moves us to search out other human beings is that we have the sensing that within that other human being, it's possible that I'm going to learn something about myself. That individual acting as a mirror for me is somehow or other going to let me discover what I have not been able to discover about myself without that mirror in front of me. And this is a paradigm. This is a structure that we live in that we're not aware of by and large, because our lives are almost all the time being compromised by little thoughts, little feelings in which we're captured for a moment and then forget that there's something inside of us that wants to be expansive. In my work, what I do, I'm not attached to words at all. I'm really not. I could care less the way in which the things that we talk about are described. But what I do care about, and what we're going to talk about tonight, is what is it that's happened? What is it that's happened? Because I really want you to understand, and maybe I better dial myself back, because this is only the first 2 minutes. We've got 45 to go, and it does peak. You and I are not supposed to walk around with stiff faces. You and I are not supposed to walk around with sullen expressions, with defeated looks upon our faces. That's not what a human being is meant to walk around like. But you walk everywhere you go, even in beautiful places, you can see men and women, and they're so indrawn. They have mistaken, and key to what we're going to talk about, they have mistaken the ideas and the images that they have about a broad life for being the greater life that we're drawn to. We've come up with a world inside of ourselves that's been given to us by our culture across the board that tells us that what it means to have a great life, a broad life that our heart naturally longs for, is to somehow or other go out and capture the images that we've been fed as to what a big life is. And power and possessions and these things, that is not a big life. That is not what answers the longing that we have to know ourselves through something greater. Is it a path to that? Perhaps it is, as all things can prove themselves to be a path to the individual who encounters the moments where they realize, you know what? I have gone as far as I can go here. I realize this is the point at which, and here's, and how many of you would like a little tell, an indication of when, as individuals, we've gone as far as we can go with what we know? How many would like to send? And I'll ask you to be involved in this, by the way. Breathe, you know, you can shake your heads. And even if you don't like what I'm saying, you can even sit and go like this if you want to. But negative states Negative states are the tell. You see an angry person, you see a person who has turned into their own a certain source of what seems to be strength that lets them forget for a moment that they've come to where they can't take themselves any further than that. And these conditions, fortunately, they can change. So while I've been kind of setting up what I want to tell you, I think what I'm going to do tonight is tell you a few stories. I'm going to tie a couple stories together so that we can begin to look at what we're going to talk about, which is this extraordinary life. And maybe I should take a minute. Maybe I should just define what I see as being an extraordinary life prior to telling you the stories. First of all, we've all known extraordinary moments in our lives, every one of us. We've all had moments that which we were working on came to pass. We've had moments with those that we love that have been extraordinary. If you're an artist of some kind, an athlete of some type, if you're a business person, we've all seen those moments in our lives where the plans that we have laid, the goals that we have set suddenly mature. There's a flowering, there's a fruit there. And that for us marks what we have called an extraordinary life. But to me, that is not the extraordinary life. To me, the extraordinary life has nothing to do with the individual instances in which suddenly life lines up and we think that, and we grab the brass ring and we've got it for a minute. To me, that's not the extraordinary life. The extraordinary life is the source of those moments that we have, not the moments themselves. The extraordinary life is what makes us possible as individuals to aspire, achieve, and listen, and then recognize that the achievement, that the limit of our view at that moment is not the limit of our possibility. That just because we've reached a point where we see something that we've gotten a hold of and it has succeeded for us in that moment, the extraordinary life comes when we recognize that that is the beginning of life, not the end of it. And that we're not to be judged by that, by ourselves or others. And we're not to try to go through life, as all of us do, trying to keep in place something that we got. So this idea of an extraordinary life, if I'm conveying it at all, is that it has nothing to do with personal victories. Because if it isn't clear yet, how many of you have known the moment where you cross the finish line? And you expect the band, you expect the trophy, you expect people to go, oh, hell yay, great runner, great this, that. And instead of getting that, or even if you do, you also get another starting gun. And you don't get the rest, and you don't get the peace. You don't get, now listen, you don't get the confirmation that you thought you were going to get from the event, from the relationship. You don't get it. Why? Because inherent inside of us is that which is always intended to go past these things. So this extraordinary life I'm talking about really begins for us, the search for it, if you will, because we're invited to it every time we long to move past who we've been. The extraordinary life is that life in which a person realizes that the contentment that he or she really longs for cannot be found in this passing world, cannot be found in the events that mark our individual experiences. Because each and every one of them, no matter how grand or low, change, pass, disappear. And the sense of self that was vested in those things, that we derived our victory from, our whole sense of worth, as soon as the thing changes and fades, which it must. Is there anybody who has any doubt in that? The thrill is gone. How many remember that song? You know, when the party's over. I mean, whatever age you're in, you recognize that there is a phenomena that attends every moment of our life wherein we realize that that which we thought was everlasting was temporary. And then we find ourselves having to go out and make, by the way, the same mistake as we made before. Which is we go out and we look for another temporary thing to do with our lives so that we can have that fix again that fixes us. And we're not to be fixed in this life. We are not fixed creatures. But we've become that way. We've become that way. There's a beautiful idea that a wonderful man that I knew for 15 years, I had the pleasure of working with him. His name was Vernon Howard. And he said, as simply as it can be put, that it is wise to seek immortality, for time defeats all other ambitions. And the extraordinary life that I'm talking about is the life that we as individuals, men and women, that we're created to live, that we're created to have live in us. But we've lost sight of it. Even if we say we haven't lost sight of it, the evidence is overwhelming, because over and over again, we return to the same patterns, the same kind of beliefs, the same hope in things seen. And our hope doesn't lie in things seen. Our real hope, the extraordinary life, is an unseen life. It is an unseen life. And you know why it's an unseen life? Because that which is extraordinary is not a product of thought. It isn't a product of thought. How many of you have had an extraordinary thought in your life? Come on, raise your hands. We've all had moments like that. And then when we have an extraordinary thought, by the way, have you noticed how extraordinary you are for having that extraordinary thought? I am so extraordinary today, it's scary. And then the conditions that allowed the extraordinary thought, or the achievement that came from it, and then I'm not extraordinary. Not only am I not extraordinary, but I'm the worst thing that ever walked the planet. In fact, I doubt if I'm going to live this moment. Anybody know that? All right, so let me tell you a story then to exemplify this. Take a deep breath. There was once a man and a woman. And by the way, in all the stories, every story, any true story, every character in the story, every element in the story, are elements of ourselves. So when you hear true spiritual stories, this is why we love the classic tales. Because when we find truths, we find ourselves in them. Sometimes we find ourselves in the hero or the heroine. We find ourselves in the villain. We find ourselves in the condition, having been there before, where the stars have conspired to keep us from our love. So these elements in the story that you're about to hear, I want you to understand that I am trying to show you something through a story. I should have started this by saying this to you. I don't have any interest. I don't. If you watch me closely tonight, especially by the time I really start jumping out of my chair, you'll know that I don't have an agenda here with you. I don't have an agenda here with you. I've been fortunate enough to learn one of the greatest secrets that there is on this planet, and that is that each and every one of us, our nature is our reward. I don't have to do anything to anyone to fix them, and I don't have to do anything one to blame anyone. Because according to our hearts goes our lives. And when you know something like that, then you're not so interested anymore in trying to get people to approve of you, because you realize you could have every human being in the world approve of you, and you're still a mess. Well, all you've really done is managed to fake out a lot of people. Of course, there's always someone that you don't fake out. And then all that you thought you had, gone. One face out of 100 people gives you the look. How many of you know the look? And you return to the doubt that started the act. And so that's why I say, I want to do is show you what I've seen. And if in showing you what I've seen, you're able to use your own life to look and see that this experience is not unique to the speaker. It's not unique to the speaker. Oh, what hope there is in the discovery. Now listen, because this is sort of against the grain, that I am not this individual that I have taken myself to be. Why is that great hope? Because that means that all the suffering that marks my individuality isn't mine alone. That every man and woman on the planet is going through the exact same upheaval day in and day out, based on living false assumptions, trying to prove things that can't prove them, and the aching inside of us is all the same. You want to hear something great? Look around you. I know it's scary, by the way. Look around you. And what a wonderful day it is when you realize that you're not the only one that's in pain. They just have a way of looking like they're not. Well, what do you think you buy in the stores? What do you think this world sells? If it's not drugs, it's some kind of designer item that makes you look as though you're not wacko. I'm happy to be speaking to you because the fact that you can laugh at this proves that you've already seen some of it. I have spoken to groups and I've been put on a rail and tarred and feathered. I have. And it may still happen tonight. I'm not done with the talk. So here's a man and a woman. And they find themselves riding in a car, a cart. And in the cart, it's starting to go up a hill. They just find themselves. Now, what's the parallel here? The parallel is we found ourselves here. At some point, God willing, you actually become conscious of the fact that you're in a body on a planet. And then when that moment comes, you go, uh-oh. And then, of course, the thought always comes, what did I do wrong? What happened? How did I get here? Have you ever asked that question? How did I get here? You deserve to be here for two reasons, which we'll get into. So here's a man and a woman, they find a car. And how many of you know a roller coaster? Right? And as you're chicking up to the top, your heart's going, ha, 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 because this is it, man. This is the top. And then you get this, and then, and the cart goes screaming down, and your hands go up in the air, which I've never understood anyway. What? What? Letting go, she said. What is that deal? No, man, you hold on to that bar. Are you kidding me? Let it go. The proof that human beings are crazy is that roller coasters exist. See, and it's humorous, but the truth is, why do we need that kind of thrill? But back to the story. So they ride this roller coaster, and they get out. And they're standing there talking to each other. And then they look up, and the sign says, there's a new name on the sign of the roller coaster. And she goes, oh, look at that. Let's go on that. I like that idea, he said. Let's go. And they get in the car. And they ride the roller coaster again. Up, 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 up. Down, 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 down. How many of you know the up and down? Up, up, up. Meaning, I've got plans. Not only have plans, but they're actually developing. It looks like something really good's going to happen. Up, 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 up. And then, because it's the nature of life on this planet, this world is a world of opposites. It is a world of opposites. And they work in a beautiful, not painful, collusion. They are continually working. Human beings only want the up, 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 up part. No down. How many of you don't want no down? No down. I have to tell a story of my wife. We live in Merlin, Oregon, little place in southern Oregon, and we live on a mountain. And shortly after we moved there, we would ride bicycle ride, and we would be able to coast from my house all the way down to the foundation. And when we got to the foundation, she wanted to know the route so we could coast back to our house. In case you don't get it, you can't coast from the top back to the top. So in time, because we have to move along because I have so much to tell you, one day they're going through the ride again. And she says to her husband, you know, we've been riding and riding and riding, but have you noticed that all the ups and downs, and we always wind up back where we started from? And he turns to her because it's a little, he says, you know what? You're right, but how come it doesn't seem like it's back where we started from? She said, well, I've been thinking about it over the last 50 years. And I think it's because the name of the ride keeps changing each time we get off. And he says to her, well, my God, could we have really spent 50 years on the same ride that goes nowhere except back to the place where it's just name changed? Is that possible? She goes, well, I'm not too excited about it either. No one wants to see where it is that from a mistaken understanding about their life and this life in general, that they have ridden a ride that has brought them back to the same place. Because there's an inherent, now listen, there's an inherent wrong, mistaken fear that we have that seeing that we've come back to the same place in spite of our best efforts to configure through imagery what we need to do so we don't get there, that there's something inside of us that says there's nothing else besides that. So therefore, we have to make the best we can out of what hasn't worked. And this is why the drug industry and all the other things that exist as they do flourish the way they do, because individuals at a certain point simply don't want to see, and this is key, that they, as they have been, have gone as far as they can go. But who I have been is not the end of what it is possible for me to understand and be. But that part of us that reaches that moment says, this is it. So they talk about it and they realize this is really not right. And so they begin the most beautiful journey towards what I call the extraordinary life. The journey begins when one sees beyond the shadow of a doubt that they have ridden this roller coaster and that it always takes them back to the same point where they started. And I know that this is hard. The medicine is bitter, but it heals. It's evident in our lives if we examine ourselves that new plans are not the same as a new life. It's just another ride, and there's something broader. I'll say it to you in the terms I used at the beginning of the talk. There is something broader and more expansive, something that isn't connected to passing time, by which we're not defined by the possessions and the people and those things that we bring around ourselves, but rather the extraordinary life itself that has moved into us and we into it have for us given us something that no longer binds us to the relationships that we have in the world that we do. There's nothing wrong with the relationships. I'd be the first one to tell you, you become the most excellent whatever it is that you want to be. You use everything you have to discover through that yourself, because that's what it's for. But to think that that is it is to make a tragic mistake. And the world sells it to us and we buy it, partly because we've never been given the real information. People just don't talk about these things. They hide them from each other. We pretend as though everything's honky-dory and it's not honky-dory. Is that a Texas word? No. Okay. What do I know? So they decide that they're not going to ride. And rather than ride, they decide that what they're going to do is explore the park that they've been in. Because if you're not going to ride, there's a lot of energy. Something has to happen with everything that's given to us moment to moment to moment. And they begin to explore the ride. And what they find, because I have to really move along now, is they find the huge wall all the way around the amusement park. And they search, and they finally, through their own efforts, find a small door. It's not very well marked, but it does say exit on it. And they walk out through that exit. And what they walk out into is a world that is depleted. It's a wasteland. The natural resources spent, air is not clean. It's not a pretty picture of the world that they exit out of that park into. And they look at this and they say, my God, these are the choices? Now, try to understand in scale. Take a deep breath. I know you need one right now. That this world that I'm describing has to do with the down part of the coaster. But more than that, they're standing there, and because this is exactly the way it works, they're standing seemingly out of nowhere. There's a nice-looking elderly man, sweet man, clean clothes. And they look at him, and they say to him, what on earth is this place? What am I looking at? And he says to them, well, very few actually get this far, but what you're looking at is what it takes to run the roller coaster. This is what has to happen in order for the ride to keep going the way it is. And they look and they say, my God, that's terrible. Are you saying that there's only the choice between this world, this life out here, which is bleak, and the ride, which goes nowhere? And he says, no, not at all. He says, there is something else. He says, there's something called the extraordinary life. And if you want to, you can make this journey yourself to the place where this extraordinary life is. And, you know, at that point, you're not an Einstein. You realize that one thing hasn't worked, and that which supported that thing that doesn't work either. So when you really realize that nothing works, it's pretty clear what you have to do, isn't it? But this is where it gets really interesting. Because the journey, and I'm using that word, to the extraordinary life, really isn't a journey at all. Every one of us has had precious moments that have been stolen from us. And the reason they've been stolen from us isn't because of individuals that we know or a world at large, but rather the world at large in ourselves. And I'm going to tell you what the precious moment is and how it connects to this extraordinary life. And what I know I ought to do, because it was stated that I would talk about 7 steps to the extraordinary life. I know that I should cover these steps, but it was an advertising ploy.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
And I don't mean it the way it sounds. You see, the steps aren't really steps at all. But they are something that we can look at and understand when we realize that this extraordinary life, that which I'm telling you, Einstein said that the central urge of every atom is to return to its source. We are the fiber of us, longs to know itself through something greater than itself, to belong to something greater than itself. Not that it becomes, not that we fall down like we've been falling down, but rather that we find in ourselves, and that's why it isn't really steps, we find in ourselves the extraordinary life. But the reason it's so hard to find is because in order to find the extraordinary life, we must be willing as individuals, as aspirants, as men and women who long for something greater than ourselves, we must be willing to see that we come to the end of things in our ordinary life. We have to be willing to see the natural end of things. You look at nature, which I love to do. I say that if you're interested, that you find the celestial in the common. Wherever you go, you can find this extraordinary life being expressed in nature, in the ordinary life. But for us, day in and day out, there come moments where, and I'll give you some examples, and you should think of some for yourself. Have you ever been in a situation where you had been asked to do something, or you were going to try to do something, and as the moment approached where you were going to maybe try to learn something new, or you were going to speak in front of a group of people, or whatever the challenge may be, and it's different for everybody. And there you are, and you start to look at what it is that you have to do, and you realize you're absolutely afraid to do it. Every voice in your head, every bell's going off. You can't. You'll never get through it. There's no way. Stop now. Why try? You know, talk. Head, blathering on. And then, because of the nature of that, whose very presence is to instill fear. It's intention. It's actually a product of divided mind. It's intention. It produces this fear. And then, out of that fear, what happens? Listen. I simply reinvent myself. I think to myself, well, as I am, I can't do this. Therefore, I'll go and I'll do some kind of figuring around and come up with something that I'll be able to meet the moment with. And ask yourself, where do we turn when we're trying to figure out how to protect ourselves from a fear or any other problem? We turn to the content of our own past. And let me explain this to you. What we imagine is our past. You think that when you imagine the future or reimagine yourself or all the things that we're taught about imagining, that somehow that imagination is the same thing as something new. You can't think of anything new. Sorry. We can intuit new things, but intuition and thinking are not the same thing. And when we sit down and we run into a moment where we can't go any farther, that's it. I'm on the roller coaster back to the man. I've come around. I'm back, come around. And I see, you know what? I'm not going anywhere. There is no point at that point to simply reinvent another destiny for ourselves, another direction for ourselves. Why? Because all we can do is repeat ourselves. This is the real definition, incidentally, of reincarnation. It's where thought reinvents itself over and over and over again, reinventing itself so that the moment that the image appears in the mind that seems to be vested with a new promise, we derive from that image the wonderful sensation and the promise of it, and we take the sensation and the image as being the same thing as the larger, extraordinary life. And it's not. It's a deception. So, these moments that come like this, where suddenly we realize that I don't know where to go in this moment. Have anybody ever been in a crisis? What is a crisis in our lives other than those moments where we don't know how to change the world around us so that we can continue being who we've been? Isn't that a pretty good definition of a crisis? I'm not saying you're going to like it. Most of what's really good for us spiritually, the truth is we're not going to like when we first hear it. But that's the fact. I encounter a crisis when I realize that the best that I know to do ain't enough. I flat run out of answers. Now that's Texan. I flat run out of answers. And then what happens if you can see it? I'm sitting here. I'm at my home. I'm at my work. I'm in the relationship. Something's going on. And this crisis is building. And the moment that it reaches a certain point, I will always default to who I've been. I let what I've known somehow figure a way out of the problem, which is the same as renaming the ride that I was talking about. And I'm excited. Have you ever noticed that? But every once in a while, for those of us that are truly fortunate, and all of us have been this way, we realize our answer isn't fixing it, and we don't know what to do to fix it, and there's nothing to do but just let it go. And as hard as those moments are on us as individuals, because we're sure that the end of the dream is the same as the end of the self that had the dream. And the end of the dream is not the end of the self that had the dream. The end of the dream is the end of a dreamer that has no place going beyond that point. And that's what happens to us, is that we get tricked in those moments. We're so used to a kind of default mechanism in our own mind because of the pressure of the fear and wanting to keep things in place. How many of you know you're psychotic when it comes to keeping things in place? We're crazy. We're crazy. Even if someone we know starts to look at us differently than they're supposed to look at us, we've got to go figure out what's wrong with them. And then fix them. Gee. Aren't you tired of fixing things? See, this is what I'm talking about. I mean, it'd be one thing if you fix, like, I'm not talking about, you fix your faucet. That's something, you know, you got to fix the faucet. That's important. And the physical things we have to fix, but we're not meant to fix ourselves. We're not meant to fix ourselves. The extraordinary life is. And we enter into that extraordinary life every time we reach that point where we see that there's no point in fixing myself again if we can reach it. And we dare the fear to do its worst to us, which is what we have to do, because that fear will come up and say, man, if you don't this and if you don't get that and if this doesn't work out, you're a goner. And I want you to remember who's talking to you in that moment. Do you see what I'm saying? If you and I could actually see in the moment where we reach the end of where there's no point in trying to fix the thing again, that the fixer, the fear fixer, appears and starts to tell us what we need to do to have a whole life, in that moment we're not going to say, thank you for showing up, I'll follow you wherever you go. That's the end of that relationship. Not based on some spiritual ideology, not based on anything other than the pure seeing of the fact of our own interior lives as it's unfolding. And that's extraordinary. Because it means each and every individual, every one of us, has the opportunity. And by the way, this isn't every week or every month. This is every moment that this is possible I'm talking to you about. Where, to say it is in slightly different words, I'm not created to fix my own life. And the way to understand it and see it more clearly is that that moment where I realize that something needs to be fixed, that this anger that I have, that I've blamed on situations outside of my life all my life, that this fear I have of not being approved, of not succeeding, or whatever it is that compels me. Can I ask you a question? How can a human being believe that anything that compels them can ever lead them to freedom? But we do. We actually think that the compulsion we have to be free is going to lead us to a free life. Compulsion doesn't lead us to freedom. It leads us to further dependency on the thoughts and feelings that compulsion whops up in order to keep itself in place in our life. So when the fear shows up, as it always does, almost daily, and you'll see this. Have you ever walked into a room and there's six or seven people sitting at a table? And as you walk up, if you're really honest, you'll notice that there's a little fear going through you. And you know what the fear is about, actually? The fear is that when you sit down, they're all going to get up. that I'm not who I've taken myself to be, and somehow the word got out before I came to sit down. And part of the extraordinary life is letting that happen. Because when we're willing to let that happen to us, meaning when we're willing to let the thing that we fear most happen to us, we don't lose anything other than our dependency upon that fear to protect us. That's the only thing we lose. We lose the dependency upon fear. Maybe these are new ideas to you. Most human beings don't think to themselves they're dependent upon fear. We are. When anything goes bad, something will always come along and tell us what we need to do to keep in place that which has actually become the source of that fear. And because I'm running out of time quickly, here's an idea that we can all use. I personally use this all the time. The moment in which you see the relationship that you've been trying to control or fix, no matter whether it's one person or 20 people or a business, no matter what, where you're asked to face a challenge of some kind, and prior to going into it, everything in you is telling you, even if you can't hear it or see it, oh boy, I gotta get, how do you ever know that one? Oh, I gotta get this one. Just one more time. Let me pull it off one more time. How many know that? The one more time pull off. Do you understand what I'm saying? Let just one more time. Let me get through it. That's no life! That's no life! Living in fear. Of what? I'll tell you of what. Of coming to the end of who I've taken myself to be. But the truth is, in the extraordinary life, is to see that who I have been cannot take me any farther. And when I see that who I've been can't take me any farther, that's the end of who I've been, but not the end of what becomes of me in that moment. Because then something else presents itself that doesn't have fear in it. That doesn't push me. Life, real life, the real life that if we have it in our hearts, to long for, that we talk about this extraordinary life, to belong to something greater, to have a relationship with that which, to have a relationship with that which continually reveals that who I am is not fixed in anything. To have that relationship requires individuals recognizing when that point comes, where they reach that moment and they dive into the old treasure chest to pull out the baubles by which they can hypnotize themselves into thinking that they're going to get through with a reconfigured life. And I want to cover some of these points because I said that I'd do it. But when I say these steps to the extraordinary life, what I'm really saying here is that every moment is a step into that if we're willing to take it. Every moment presents an opportunity if we're awake enough, and it's a word that I use a lot, to be awake to ourselves, to be aware of ourselves in the moment. Because it's in that true moment-to-moment awareness of ourselves, and which you can do right now while I'm talking to you. You can actually come aware of the whole of yourself. What's passing through your emotional system? What's your mind occupied with? Is there tension in your body from listening to this man rant and rave for the last 40 minutes. To be awake like that is a door, because it allows us to have an uninterrupted view of what ordinarily is taken all the time from us, where our own thoughts sneak in and once again try to tell us how to get past or through some fear or stress or problem that we have. So these steps that I'm going to describe, they're really ways in which, and I call them exercises really, in which every day of our lives, there are all these opportunities to go through that moment where parts of us want to come back and reconfigure our lives, literally recreate ourselves in an image that we can feel comfortable with again, but that always proves itself to be empty, as all images ultimately do. So the first of these seven steps is to let nagging questions go unanswered. To let nagging questions go unanswered. How many of you have nagging questions? And I'm not talking about your husbands or wives. Nagging questions. Let them go unanswered. What does it mean to let them go unanswered? It means what? Here I am, and she didn't respond to me the way she's supposed to respond to me. He didn't give me what I wanted in the moment. I just heard that somebody was talking about me. You name what it is. These nagging questions. What's going to happen to me tomorrow if, and you fill in the blank. Nagging questions. And what do we do when these questions start nagging us? You know, I've been talking about it. I answer them. Let them go unanswered. And what happens to us if we let these nagging questions go unanswered is we discover little by little by little that the self that was afraid of what was taking place wasn't us in the first place. We actually, the only way we get to see that we are not the fear is to let the fear go unanswered. That is the only way, because otherwise everything that fear prompts us to do develops another promise in our mind by which we think we escape the situation we blamed for the fear. But the fear is not in the situation. Can you understand that? The fear is not in the situation. The fear is in what I want from the situation. Which means no matter how I control the situations, it's not changing this essential nature that derives its sense of value from conditions outside of itself. And that can't lead to the extraordinary life. Number two, what I call, don't make the rescue call. Now, what does that mean? How many of you, when you hit a rough patch, call somebody on the phone? Raise your hands. This is why Bell Telephone is one of the largest companies in the world. All we know how to do when things get tough is call somebody. Go find someone to tell our troubles to. By the way, they don't want to see you coming. I know that's hard to swallow because we think everyone wants to see us coming. They look at you with that face and they go, oh my God, not again. But the reason that they listen to you is because they know that they're going to come to you with that face tomorrow. Don't make the rescue call. And here's how it invites the extraordinary life. Don't seek consolation from this world. Don't seek consolation from this world. I'm not saying it isn't wonderful to have someone that you love and them that loves you. But every time that you go to someone with your problem, you don't make yourself stronger. You make yourself weaker. Because what you're doing is validating in your own mind the self that meets life, thinking that unless it goes the way it wants to, the self is not of value, has no worth. Don't make the rescue call. And if you don't make the rescue call, something extraordinary happens. And here's what happens, but only if you don't make the rescue call. What you discover is that the self that you thought needed rescuing doesn't exist. It's just a thought, an idea, a strong one, no doubt, an image that's well vested, maybe has 50 years behind it to seem crystal and clear and strong. But don't make the rescue call and see what happens. Number three, take the hard way. Take the hard way. There's a beautiful saying that if you want the easy life, take the hard way. If you take the hard way, you'll come to the easy life. If you take the easy way, you'll always come to the hard life. Take the hard way. And actually, we've been talking about that a little bit, taking the hard way, because it's pretty hard in the moment where I'm full of anger or fear or stress or whatever. It's pretty hard to look at all of that and recognize that the very best thing I can do for myself in that moment is to let myself go, not save myself. That's hard to do. And it's hard not to follow the impulse to try to bring everyone you know into your problems. Listen, you know the saying, a problem shared is half a problem? Okay, I'm not going to go further with that. The point of take the hard way is that getting around something is not the same as rising above it. And we're meant to rise above these things, not find ways around them, because what goes around comes around again. Did I say that? Yeah. What we go around, we never get away from. Have you not noticed that? How many of you tried to go around a rocky relationship only to wind up marrying Rocky? Because the nature doesn't change. Number four. Do the thing you fear doing. This is about the extraordinary life. Do the thing you fear doing. Why? Being willing to risk failure is a prerequisite for the fearless life. Being willing to risk failure is the prerequisite for a fearless life. And here's why. The extraordinary life, its nature, it can't fail. Failure is a human idea. It's a human idea. It's the low side of the roller coaster that gives rise to the upside where I'm going to get past this thing in my life that caused the failure. No one get past that. As long as they're going up, they're going down. That's the rule. Learn what it means to do the thing that you fear doing, because when we're willing to take the leap, willing to risk that, here I am, and I'm sure that if I do this or say that or whatever it may be, and you have to find the individual instances, there aren't time in this talk to cover all of that. If you'll go ahead and leap, which means what? I'm going to have to leave the me behind that doesn't want to do anything except cling with its claws like a little eaglet on a nest. You know, have you ever seen those eaglets when they're hanging onto the nest and they got their claws in it? Instinctually, they're clinging there because they know they better not let go. But inwardly, their nature is saying, leap, man, fly. And always they will. They'll answer the longing to soar. And you and I as individuals have it in us to take that kind of leap. And if we do, and only if we do, in the face of fear, do we find out that the ground is always beneath us. You cannot risk that kind of fear without finding out something about fear itself. And everything that we find out about the nature of fear adds to that extraordinary life that doesn't have fear in it, because failure isn't a part of its life. So learn what that means to do the thing you fear doing. Number five, you'll like this one. Take time out from yourself every day. Now, I know that you think that what you need space from is from the people around you. But the people around you are not the problem. It's your reactions to the people around you. In fact, one day you'll thank everyone around you for being exactly what they are, because each and every one of them offers you an opportunity to leave who you have been behind. Because they're showing you something about your actual level. We don't want to see our actual level, which is why we have people that we don't like. That's right. We're sure that the reason we feel the way we do is because basically everyone else is an idiot. Essentially. And mostly all we meet is idiots. Unless someone flatters us, then they're very wise. And oh, if the world was only as wise as it ought to be. So what does it mean? Take time out from yourself every day. We'll do it right now. Come awake. Let it go. The mind engaged in itself, trying to resolve thought with thought. It's like using a fan to straighten out papers on your desk. Let it go. And there's ways to do it. If nothing else, let's say you have to work. Just sit at your desk and remember the extraordinary life. If you like the word remember, God, remember the truth, remember what's bright, remember what's light, remember that you have inside of you that inherent longing. And I tell you, in any moment that you remember that, this is the truth, in any moment that you remember the extraordinary life and you're willing to suspend that very ordinary life that thought has engendered in us, in that split second, I tell you, a piece of it pours into you. It's impossible that it doesn't happen, because our awareness is a connection with it. and the ability to remember what we wish, use our attention for the purpose it was given to us for, which is to create this awareness and remember our place in it, in that instant, everything changes because we are in that moment no longer who we have been. And those moments, by the way, as we have them, will continue to feed inside of ourselves that which is willing to take more and more of these risks that we've been talking about. Number six, open yourself to life. Open yourself to life. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean to get on a lounge chair someplace with a cocktail. That's what we think. Let's go open ourselves to life. Okay, where do you want to go? That's not opening ourselves to life. Opening ourselves to life means being willing to live without defining ourselves. First thing that happens anytime something goes wrong is we rush in, grab the book of self, look through the definitions that apply, blame the people who haven't read the book. Yes or no? And then we usually give them the book, or we throw it at them. That's not what open yourself to life means. Open yourself to life means that in the moment where the fear comes, don't name it. And when that anger comes up towards someone, don't let your mind, your nature, name for you who did whatever it is it's telling you did it to you. Open yourself up so that the very force of life itself, of those states that we embrace by resisting, we embrace negative states by resisting them. So that in the moment of that instant, instead of resisting the state, you embrace, you open yourself to life, which means in that instance, you're the one who actually becomes conscious of what that's doing inside of you, because you're not naming it. You're not calling on your past to get you through that moment by giving you something comfortable, something that protects you from what's passing through you. If you ever ask this question, how can something pass through me if I stop it? And every time we name a negative state, we build a shrine for it inside of ourselves. Open the front door, open the back door. In it comes, it does it work, we see things about ourselves, and whoop, it's gone. But in order for that to happen, we have to open ourselves up to what? All of the thoughts and feelings that come in that start to say, oh my God, oh no, what's oh, he, oh this, that, and the other, and all that dialogue goes on, and as soon, if you ever been, how many know what a shill game is? You know, a sting operation. We this is a living sting operation up here between the ears. Well, are you telling me you haven't bought 1,000 bill of goods that wound up being worth nothing? Number seven, and the last of them, what I call of how to discover this extraordinary life. Make no campsites. Make no campsites. The extraordinary life visits individuals, not groups, not organizations. If you know someone that tells you that you have to believe the way they believe, get rid of them. If you find yourself becoming identified with something that defines you, I want you to start recognizing that the thing that defines you by the fact of the possibility of the extraordinary life, the thing that defines you secretly defiles you. It steals from you the possibility of letting go, living and dying moment to moment to moment. It isn't a fancy idea. It's not a motivational phrase. It's a fact of our lives if we're willing as individuals to pay the price for this extraordinary life. And I'm telling you that we can. We're built to do it. But it requires being honest about ourselves. It requires having those moments where I talked about, where you see, you know what? I can't go any farther than this. I mean, I want to, because that's how I feel safe. I go before myself to make the crooked places straight. But going before yourself doesn't make the crooked places straight. It makes them crooked. Let it go. Don't be afraid to come to the end of yourself. No one can teach you how to do this, by the way. Nobody can teach you how to do this. Life itself, I believe, is all the time reaching out and tapping us, if you will, inviting us, say, what do you think of this moment? Because there you are, you're angry, you're going over an old resentment with somebody, you've got an anxiety about something taking place, and you're going, and life's saying, hello, what do you think of this moment? And in those moments where we can come awake to ourselves and see what's going on, we can do the one thing that really creates the possibility, that not doesn't create the possibility. We can do the one thing that is the new life. Let go of the old one. We do that, and it is unfailing that the extraordinary life will be ours.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.